Yes. All right, let's go ahead and pray. God, it's really cool when we hear something that comes out of our culture that actually speaks to your heart. And, you know, these words right here, that where I invest my life is where I invest my love. Where I invest my love is where I invest my life. God, our prayer this morning as we are in week number 5 of this journey is that you would awaken our soul. God, that you would awaken us to the things that your heart beats after. And God, awaken us to the things that you want our lives to be after. And God, we just pray that as a result of our time here today, that you would help us to see new things and to be more and more and increasingly consumed by you. We pray these things in your name and in your character. Amen. Well, you know, we've been looking over these last weeks at what it means to be consumed, whether we're consumed with our stuff, whether we're consumed with all the things that this world has to offer, or if we're consumed with God. And, you know, one of the saddest regrets in life might be that we find ourselves on the journey, but missing out on the adventure. And this reminded me, as I thought about this, back when I was like 6 years old, I remember going on a trip to Florida with my family when I was 6, and we were going to visit some friends of our family, and they lived on a lake, and they had a boat. And in the moment when a 6-year-old boy hears about a boat, I mean, I was super excited. I don't know why my parents told me this like 3 months before we left, because, you know, for the next 3 months, I could not wait to you know, get in the car and head for it. In fact, every day I asked, are we going today? Are we going today? I mean, we're going to get on the boat today? I mean, I had visions of, you know, skiing and tubing and fishing And man, I was dreaming at night about riding in a boat. I'd never been in a boat before. And so this is like a really cool deal. And so we got in the car and, you know, all 17 and a half hours down to Central Florida, you know, I was asking every hour I hear from my dad, you know, that hey, how much longer till we get to ride the boat? And I tell you what, the moment we hit the ground there and our car pulled into our friends, the Yeager's home, you know, I busted open that door and I'm running to the dock. I'm putting a life vest on and I'm standing out there for like hours waiting. I'm like, come on, this is why we're here, you know. My family's like in visiting with their friends and we're staying with them for a couple days. And eventually, you know, it happened. And everybody starts walking out to the dock. And about that moment, you know, when you're really excited and your heart begins like beating out of your chest. I just remember it like, you know, this pitter-patter. And so everybody comes and the family we were staying with had 2 older boys. They're probably, I don't know, young teenagers. And they bring these skis and I'm watching them put the skis on the boat. And then we get in the boat and we begin slowly making our way out of the wake area, you know, out into the lake. And as we begin to move out further and further, I just remember sitting there, you know, like this, and like gripping my chair, you know, tighter and tighter. And then, you know, I'm watching them put their skis on, and they're skiing on the lake. And again, I'm gripping my chair a little tighter. And then I hear the words I've been waiting for 3 months, right? Mr. Yeager says, all right, Curtis. That's what they used to call me, Curtis. All right, Curtis, you're up. It's your turn. And so I in that moment, I said what any 6-year-old boy who was scared would say. I said, you know, skiing and tubing seems awful boring right now. I think I'd rather go hang out on the dock. You know, the dock looks awful fun. I mean, I loved when I was staying on the dock, you know, in my life vest, watching all the boats go by. And they're like, well, you sure you don't want? I'm like, no, man, that looks boring. I mean, I'm past that stuff, you know. I mean, right, that's just what you do when you're a kid. And so I remember my dad coming over to me, and he's like, no, Curtis. He's like, listen, we've been talking about this for months. This is, you know, you were talking about you couldn't wait to be on the boat. You were dreaming at night about you couldn't wait to be on the boat. And we're finally here. I mean, are you sure you don't want to get out on the water? I'm like, no, it seems boring. I'm like, I just really want to go back to the dock. And so my dad, I mean, he was trying to woo me. He's really trying to, and I know that parent tension when you're like, do I just make him stay out here? Do I do what he wants? And he just kept trying to woo me with how great it was going to be. And finally he relented. And he took me back to the dock. And man, as soon as we got to the dock, I hurried off the boat. I'm like, man, this is cool right here. I mean, this is awesome. I can run and I can come and watch boats on the dock. I can go inside and get a drink. Man, I love the dock. The dock is awesome. And so, you know, I started spending the afternoon on the dock. And it was interesting because, you know, hour upon hour, I'm standing there on the dock. I'm sitting there on the dock. And I'm watching the same boats go by, watching the same kids with their dads, you know, having fun, screaming, laughing, you know, keep circulating around the lake. And all, you know, after a while, it began to get a little old, if I'm honest. And you know, after a while, I began to feel a little bored. I remember even getting sleep. I think I even put my head down on the dock. You know, I'm like, hey, I'm just gonna, you know, snooze here. It's very hot. And I think the biggest thing when I was on the dock is I missed my dad. I had these dreams of, you know, what I was gonna do with my dad, and now he's out with our friends and their friends' kids. And I felt, I just remember feeling totally stuck. I mean, I was safe. I was, you know, on the dock, but I remember feeling totally stuck. And when my dad and his friends finally came in later in the afternoon, I mean, they were like red in the face and they were exhausted from a day of skiing and, you know, out on the water. I mean, they were hungry and I'm sure they were dehydrated a bit, you know, from just, you know, being out in the sun all day. And I remember we got in for dinner that night and the other boys that were on the boat that day, see, they had something else that I didn't have. You see, they had stories. They had stories of an unforgettable day with their dad out on the water. And I didn't have those. Now, I revealed nothing at that point, all right? I was insistent. This was the best day ever of my vacation. I mean, being on the dock was awesome. I got to watch boats and run in the grass and, you know, go inside and come back out. And you know, I just remember, you know, trying to convince myself how great it was. And yet, if I'm really truthful, I was on the trip there, but I missed the adventure. I miss the adventure of all the excitement of what was happening on the water. And here I am 35 years later, and I can still remember what it felt like to be stuck on the dock. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of times when I talk to, you know, other Christians and some of my friends who are experiencing some of those same feelings, they're like, man, I just feel like I'm stuck right now. I'm stuck on the dock. And I mean, it's not that they're not traveling with Jesus. They're traveling. They're on the journey. They're just missing the adventure. And one of the ways that God, you know, invites us into this consumed, you know, journey, into being consumed with Him in increasing ways, is He invites us off of the dock and out into the waters. And this is a place that's full of struggle. It's full of human need. It's a place where sometimes we don't feel like we have everything in control. It's a place where sometimes we feel like, man, I'm not exactly sure my competencies are going to allow me to accomplish what I'm doing. And yet Jesus says, man, the greatest joy that you'll ever experience, the greatest fulfillment, it's out in the water. It's not when we're sitting on the dock. And yet we say, well, you know, I'm pretty sure. I think I just want to stay on the dock. I think I'll just sit here. And so we see Jesus, yet once again, strapping on the skis, and you know, he's getting ready to go out for yet another day on the water with his dad. So how can we, you know, those of us who say in our hearts that we want to follow Jesus, how can we make sure we won't miss him? And one of the things I loved about Paul's story a moment ago was he talked about how he was so fixated on all the numbers behind his portfolio that he was missing the very things right in front of him. How can we make sure we don't miss him? How can we make sure we get off the dock? Well, I think the Apostle Peter actually had it right when he said, therefore, get your minds ready for action. All right, sometimes we're like, man, I'm going to pray about it. Well, you know, prayer is only as good as the action that's with it. Prayer is never something that we just do and sit. Prayer always requires us to get after something. And there's two things that I think that clarity comes up for on us. I think there's two things we have to get clear on. One is, where is Jesus going? I mean, if I'm going to get out on the water with Jesus, where is he going? What is he doing? What does it look like to be consumed with Jesus in my life? Well, what it means is getting out of the Christian cul-de-sac, the Christian roundabout, where we just keep doing the same things over and over, and actually getting out into the place where we roll up our sleeves and we take the risk of getting a bit dirty and maybe feeling like, you know, our competencies aren't fully going to accomplish what's needed in this moment. It means getting involved in the lives of people. Second question we have to ask ourselves is, what kind of world is Jesus headed into? Well, I can assure you it's one thing. It's not the safety of the dock. Right, the dock's awful safe. No, it's out where there's waves. It's out where things get a little rocky at times. It's out where sometimes there's swells that begin to come over the side of the boat. And you begin to realize that, man, I don't know if this is fully what I signed up for, but Jesus, as long as I'm out here with you, we're good. It's a place of human need. It's a place where lives are messy. And the bigger question then is, of course, why is Jesus going there? I mean, why in the world is Jesus going out into places like this? And see, one of the most difficult things in our world for people to understand about the Christian faith is how God can be so good when they're in so much pain. See, people, that's the biggest question. How can I really believe there's a God who's so good if I'm experiencing all this pain? Do you realize today that over 20,000 children will die today because their parents don't have nutrition to be able to sustain their life? 20,000 children. Do you realize there's tens of thousands of children who woke up this morning on streets somewhere in our metropolitan areas in the United States simply because they don't have a home to go to overnight? 20,000. How do you tell the parents of those kids or those kids that there's a God who is good when every day they wake up and they're in a lot of pain? You realize there's people that will walk in our doors as they do every single weekend that are walking through here, you know, looking just like you and I, like everything's good on the outside, and yet maybe they've just experienced the brokenness of a marriage. Kids walking into our kids' environments who are missing a mom or a dad that are just non-existent in their life. You know, people who maybe have walked in and they're in a point of desperation because they just lost a job or a business just failed by no act of their own, just downsizing or just because of the state of the market. I mean, how can you convince somebody like that that God is good when the experience right now is of brokenness and pain? You know, one of the broader questions that we have to wrestle through is, what is God's plan for making the fact that he is a good God believable? I mean, for people who are suffering and struggling and can't see how there's anything more than what they're currently experiencing, what's God's plan for actually helping them see that he's good? Now, the answer we find in the Bible is actually a bit surprising. It's a bit disturbing to me as well, all right? And we're going to take a look at it here in just a moment, but what the Bible says is, we are the plan. You and I, we're the plan. Basically, God's like, there is no other plan. I don't have a plan B. That's a bit disturbing to me if you want to know the truth. I mean, I'm the plan. I mean, this is it right here. And in fact, take a look at what Jesus said to his team in Matthew chapter 5. He said, you are the light of the world. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Notice he didn't say here, you might be the light of the world. He didn't say you could be the light of the world. You know what he didn't say? He didn't say, boy, man, the world's screwed. I sure hope you're the light of the world. He didn't say that. You know what he said? He said, you're it. You are it. You and I. There is no plan B. And so for 2,000 years plus, people who have been following after the heart of God, who have been consumed with God's heart, have been trying to make it believable to people who can't see that there's a God who is good, that there's actually a God who loves them. So what does that look like? I want to give us some examples of that today. I want us to see very clearly and hear what it looks like for people to be engaged in helping others who are suffering understand that there's a God who is good. Because one of the things we firmly believe around here is that generous communities change the world. We believe that when communities get generous, teams get generous, doesn't matter what kind of team it is, that the world, the face of the landscape of the world begins to get changed. And there's some things that happen in and out of this place each and every week. We'll hit those in a few minutes. But first of all, I want you to see what happens through some of our partnerships, a couple initiatives coming up right in the night, even starting today, where you can get on board and begin to change the world. So help me welcome to the platform Darren, Ben, and Amy. Let's welcome them this morning. Come on up here, guys. It's great to have these guys with us today, and they are going to share a bit of what God's doing through things they're a part of and we're a part of. And Darren, first of all, is with Youth Mentoring Initiative, and you're an organization right here in Fishers. Explain to us what YMI is.
Why we exist. We are working inside the schools to mentor those students.
And these are students who what? You know, might have a single parent at home or might have a need in their life that they just need additional support that they're not able to get in those places, correct?
Exactly. They might need
support. And this is right here in Fishers. Right, I mean, we think, oh, nobody needs extra support here, right? I mean, yeah.
I tell people when I speak that wealth doesn't equal health. It is just a mess.
Yeah.
There are needs that our students have. There's so many of our students who need to be on someone's radar. They need someone who will spend time and be present in their life. Someone like Ben.
And so Ben, 2 years ago, we had Darren in to talk about this, which we have each of the last few years. We sponsor YMI as a partnership here. And Ben heard this. He said, man, I could do that. So explain to us what that looks like for you, Ben, and why you got involved in that.
Yeah, so about 2 years ago when Darren came in, I guess before that, I had the ability and the time to be a volunteer coach both in Indianapolis, and then my wife and I moved to Tucson. And then when I came back, my job would not allow that. So I was missing that something, that fulfillment you get from giving back. I know Kurt talks about it on a weekly basis around, you know, not only volunteering with CrossPoint, but out in the community. So when Darren started talking about that, that really hit home to me, and something was, you know, pushing me in that direction to say, hey, I can give 45 minutes, you know, to help Fishers, help the community, and that's why I chose to do it.
And so what does that look like for you in terms of when you meet with this student, where does that happen and what do you talk about? What kind of things?
So the great thing about YMI is it's structured, but there's flexibility. So we'll meet on campus either at a junior high, and I've been with my mentee for 2 years now. So now I go to the Fishers High School and I meet with them on a weekly basis on a Thursday for 45 minutes. If I need to meet on a Wednesday, they're flexible. We can bounce around. And it's very simple. The structure's there. There's an action plan, and you can follow that as close to as you want. You can read it verbatim and have a conversation that way, or you have the flexibility to start the conversation and just see how they're doing. And my big thing is I'm not a counselor. I'm nothing close to a counselor. At times I wish I was a counselor, but what I am is a person who's there, and I let my mentee know that I care for him. I'm fortunate enough to have two loving parents. My mentee has a broken house. His mom hates his dad. His dad hates his mom. And this poor kid, you know, is stuck right in the middle of it. And the biggest words that I say to him is that I care about you, Blake. And for a 16-year-old kid who has a pretty tough exterior, it's amazing what those words will do to him. And know that someone's there, a solid structure in his life, it's unbelievable.
Awesome. So Darren's going to be out in the lobby after services today. He can be out at Connection Point taking names.
Yeah, right? Do it.
Awesome. Awesome.
Now, that is, I was telling Kurt, you know, I have a chance to go to churches, and this is just an awesome response.
And you need more because you're on a 2020 initiative.
Yeah, 2020 initiative. We want to hit 600 by 2020. By mid-December, we'll have 80 mentoring students. We want to get to 100.
So it sounds like you're up to 94 right now, right?
Your neighborhoods or even probably next door that need to be on someone's radar. And so I ask you to consider volunteering this 1 hour a week being a part of what we're doing in the schools. The schools have opened their doors to communities, let people like Ben and you to come in and be present in the lives of the students.
Yeah, and so hit up Darren afterwards. Ben will be out there as well. Yeah.
About the challenge I did it before to the CrossPoint family. Kurt talks about this all the time, too, as well, is actions speak louder than words and thoughts. So if anybody in the crowds out there, you know, is even thinking about it right now, stop by and see Darren and myself. And, you know, we are the plan, like Kurt said before. So it's really up to us to make this community better. And then also what Amy's going to talk about here in a second. If you have any inkling or any idea about it, stop by and see us.
Awesome. Thank you, Ben. You know, and the schools are a big part of how we work because schools provide infrastructure, provide, the network to get the needs met and make sure the resources are going to the right place. Another initiative beginning today is something called Spread Some Cheer. It's a meal box drive that we do every single year. In fact, in your weeklies, you had an insert. It's actually a shopping list. And this is something that started about 5-6 years ago because I was talking to one of my principal friends who at that point was at IPS school number 96 on the west side of Indy. And she was just talking about how their kids come Christmas break that wouldn't have food in their homes because two of their meals a day came from school. They'd go to school and get breakfast and lunch. And sometimes the only meal, they maybe get one meal if that at home. And we're like, man, there is something just not right about that. There's something not right about kids not having food at home. And we felt like, you know, we could pray about it, but we feel like action, as Ben said, is much more powerful than just sitting around and wondering if we should do something. This doesn't require prayer. This is like, oh, there's a problem. What can I do to meet it? And so we started a partnership, and it's called Spread Some Cheer. And so this year we are going to be sending 140 boxes, almost this size right here, of food into homes of families. It started with 40 or 50. A couple years ago, we added some of the Fishers schools in this community. I think we had 5 schools we delivered boxes into last year, and I loved it. I love that we're doing this in the greater Indiana area as well as right here in Fishers. And a few years ago, somebody said, well, man, why are we doing it in Fishers? There's no people with needs up here in Fishers. Well, there are. There are. You just don't see it. We hide it really well in our community. And so Principal Amy Jackson, who is my friend and also my kid's principal, is here today. And her school is one of the partnerships that we use as an infrastructure to get these into the homes that need them. Talk a little bit about what that's looked like and the impact you've seen of that gap being filled by these meals. They're thinking like a Christmas basket, right?
Yeah,
like a
I could probably spread this out. So overwhelmed just by the generosity of the giving within the box. I had a family that shared, wow, if we didn't have this box, we got to come get this food. We probably would have just had sandwiches and things like that for our holiday meal. So the recipients truly recognize community and people that care that are going over and beyond being generous. And, you know, obviously our hope is that through our generosity as a community that they're seeing God's love for them.
Yeah, and this is the way we show it, right? I mean, when people are struggling, somebody's got to go and show them. So what does that mean for you? I mean, you're deeply connected here, and this is your tribe too now serving in this way. Awesome. Yeah, you didn't know Amy goes back before Crosspoint existed. I mean, you were part of this plan early on, right? So here, what do we do? How do we do this? Well, take this shopping list. There's boxes in the lobby today, 140 of them. They've got to go out. There's a family attached to every single box. All right, this is not going to some empty, well, we hope we have families. There's a family assigned to every single box. And these come back to this place on December 14th, one of the most powerful weekends of the year. The generosity that flows, you can bring it anytime that morning. We're going to have big, big trailers out front, and these boxes will get loaded in those trailers and literally go into homes on December 14th. This is a week and a half before Christmas. Somebody said to us, well, man, aren't most of it's non-perishable. What about the turkey? Is that going to last till Christmas? And one of our principals or counselors said to us, you know what? Likely this food's never going to make it to Christmas. Is they need it now. And so our goal isn't that it's just on the table at Christmas morning. Our plan is, hey, we want to make it available, get it into the hands that need it. So great ways to be generous. Another initiative you're going to see next week is something called the Giving Tree. And this is something that we've done the last number of years, again, through one of our partner schools up in Noblesville in this case. Actually, one of the schools in Hamilton County that has the greatest number of kids under the poverty level, and we're providing Christmas for 20 kids. We're putting clothes on them. It's a couple gifts and then mostly clothes, underwear, socks, you know, just core essentials. And so next weekend, you'll see a tree in the lobby and you'll see ornaments on it. You can take those off and those need to be returned here by December 7th. And those literally will be the Christmas for some kids who otherwise wouldn't have that. So this is what happens. Generous communities change the world. So let's thank Ben and Darren and Amy for sharing this morning. Thank you guys and for what you do. Awesome. Awesome. You know, a few years ago, somebody said to me, they said, you know, Kerr, is this really making a difference? I mean, you know, at that time, we're doing like 60 boxes of meals going into homes. Are we even making a dent in the community with this? And it reminded me of a story that Jesus told back in the Gospels, you know, back 2,000 years ago. The Gospels are like the authorized biographies of Jesus' life. And so it's like people just reporting what they saw. And this was one of the moments where Jesus fed 5,000 men and their families and children. And if you, some of you may remember this story because Jesus had been teaching for a really long time. All right, he'd been up on a hill, and you think I talk long, man. Jesus was talking for a while. He's talking like all day, and his disciples, his team, came to him, and they said, you know, Jesus, these people have been out here. Everybody's getting really tired. They haven't had anything to eat all day. We think you should dismiss them so they can go home and get something to eat. And Jesus, for some reason, he doesn't want to miss the fun and adventure in this moment. All right, and so you know what he says to them? He says, no, don't send them away. Feed them. And they're like, feed them? Now, here's what I love about the disciples. Have you never noticed how patient the disciples are with Jesus? Have you ever noticed that? Whenever they feel like Jesus just isn't quite really reading the situation right, they're like, they're very patient. And they're like, well, Jesus, we don't know if you even noticed. There's 5,000 of them. I mean, this is Son of God, right? And yet they're like, let us point something out that you're not seeing just in case you haven't noticed. They're like, there are 5,000 men and their children and wives. I mean, they take a half a year's wages for us to feed all. There's no way we can do this. You know what? They did one of these numbers right here. They're like, whoop, back to you, Jesus, back in your court, balls in your court. See how you're going to solve this. And it's very fascinating because what does Jesus say? What does he say? He says something very interesting. He says, well, what is it then that you do have? What is it that you do have? And you know what their corporate response is? They actually bring this little boy up. They walk him up. And all he has is the little lunch his mom made for him to take off for the day. He has like two fish and five loaves of bread in there. And this is the corporate response of this whole team. We got this little boy. In fact, here's what it says in John chapter 6. Take a look. It says, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up and said, here is a boy with five small barley loaves and two small fish. And so probably the only smart one in the group right here, Andrew probably had a PhD in public policy or something. All right, I mean, he's like, he's got five loaves of bread and two fish. And look at what he says. He says, but how far will they go among so many? See, that would actually have been my genius right there. I'm like, I mean, I went to college. I did math. I can pretty much determine 5,000 men plus their families, five loaves of bread, two fish. No way this is covering everybody right here. And take a look at what Jesus' response is. This is in one of the other gospels. Same story. Somebody else writing down what they're seeing. Jesus says, bring it to me. He says, just give it to me. Give it to me. Just bring it right here. And in that moment, Jesus takes what that little boy brought, and he takes responsibility for feeding over 5,000 men and their families through a miracle. He took responsibility. You notice Jesus in this story, you know what he never asked? He never asked what was needed. He never said, hey, Andrew, how much food do you think it's going to require? He just simply said, what do you have? And they had one little boy that brought what he had. And Jesus multiplied it and fed everyone, not just till they were full, but he fed them overflowing, it says. It says there was food left over after everybody had eaten. See, Jesus takes responsibility for the miracle. He's not asking you and I to do the miracle. He's just asking the question, what do we have? When I speak to guys like Ben, and he said it right here this morning, you know, and oftentimes they're like, man, I don't have everything needed to mentor these boys or these girls. I mean, I wish I was a counselor, but I don't. That's not my skill set. I'm a business guy. And yet, you know what happens? He brings what he has. And in some unique way, God takes it and multiplies it and fills the void. It's amazing. So we do this at Crosspoint here every weekend. I mean, week in, week out, there's people serving all around this place. I mean, you know, there's kids taking care, people taking care of your kids back in kids' environments. You know, listen, most of these people don't have, you know, educations in primary education or secondary education degree or preschool degree. They're just people, normal people working at banks and in auto shops and, you know, construction and, you know, working in a, you know, running a business. And they're like, hey, I don't know what it takes to do kids, but I like kids and here's what I have. And every week, children, I heard somebody just this past week say to me that their kids were so excited to go out and shop for Operation Christmas Child, they couldn't wait to be generous and give kids some of the toys they wanted themselves. I thought, man, how cool is that for a kid to get that at like 4 or 6? You know, the people up here on the stage, I mean, you know, we've got a computer programmer, a sales guy, and a business owner, a carpenter. I mean, we've got, you know, in the back, we've got a golf club fitter running knobs at the soundboard and, you know, a customer service agent and a student studying engineering. I mean, we don't have any professionals here. These are just people who say, hey, here's what I do have. And God takes those things, what we have, and he actually changes the world. He changes things. And this is what I believe God is calling us into. When we begin to get consumed with the things that God's heart is consumed by, when we begin to step out off the dock into places that maybe we're a little beyond where we're comfortable, you know, where maybe we don't feel like we always have the competencies, it's in those moments that God calls us to begin to risk generosity and to trust him. And that's where the adventure begins. You know, I was sitting on the dock with my dad that day after, you know, they brought me back in. I mean, he was trying to woo me back out onto the water. And listen, he wasn't trying to woo me because he was trying to punish me. He was trying to woo me because he knew what great things were going to be happening out there. You know, he was trying to woo me because, you know, it's not because he needed me to be out there as his son. It's because he wanted me to be out there. He was inviting me to be out on the water because he loved me, because he knew how much I talked about this thing, and he actually wanted me to experience the adventure of it. I mean, you know, he wanted to rescue me from my small fears. I mean, he knew that there was an incredible day that was waiting out on the water. And if I just sat on the dock, I was going to regret that I was on the trip, but I wasn't experiencing the fullness of what he had for me. And that's the simple invitation right there. That's our Heavenly Father is offering us a simple proposition. He's saying, hey, will you follow me? Will you begin to be consumed by my heart and follow me into places that maybe you can't fully control? Will you roll up your sleeves and get engaged, whether it's here or, you know, out in the community through mentoring or providing a box for people who don't have food, whatever it might be? Will you roll up your sleeves and do something that maybe is beyond your competencies? Because you know what happens when we get beyond our competencies? We actually have to begin to depend on God. And see, here's what I've discovered. I've discovered that, you know, that God wants us to be engaged in what he's doing. That's why my kids are always like, Dad, can I help you? Can I help you do this? Can I help you do that? It's because my kids want to be about their father's business. God wants to invite us into his business. And we have to ask ourselves the question, where am I engaged in the kingdom? Where am I serving? Where am I pouring my life out? Where am I financially giving? What cause have I taken on? You know, where do I need God to show up in order for something to succeed? So I always ask myself that question. Where in my life am I doing something that requires God to show up? Because if I'm not doing that, then I really don't need God. See, here's what I've discovered. See, and this is probably true of yourself as well. I'm always kind of like, man, I want to experience you more. I want more of you in my life. But here's what I've discovered, that God can't continue to pour himself into me when I'm not emptying the tank. See, so many times we want God to pour into us, and we just sit around full all the time. We're never emptying the tank. And it's only when we begin to empty the tank that God can actually begin to pour more in. Gary Hagen, president of International Justice Mission, he talks about Mother Teresa. I call her Mama T. It's just kind of like a nickname I have for her. Mama T. He talks about Mama T, and he says, you know, Mama T, he says she can't, you know, if you don't know about Mother Teresa, you know, her life's work was taking care of the poor, people with AIDS, dying on streets in India. And he said she would often talk about how she couldn't even realize or understand doing her work in a way that didn't require her to be in prayer at least 30 minutes, every 30 minutes, right? She couldn't imagine doing her work for more than 30 minutes without prayer, Which begs the question, what in my life, where am I engaged where I can't consider doing it more than 30 minutes without prayer? And it's not a torture thing. It's a, where am I getting my hands dirty, engaged, where I need God to show up in order for something to be successful. See, when you're out on the water, you want and need to talk to your Father. I mean, when you're out there risking and experiencing the adventure, you actually need God. This is what drives us to prayer. We're safe on the dock. Man, I just need to check in with my dad every now and then. I'm going to sit in my seat for a while and, you know, enjoy. I might even nap for a little while. You know, I'm going to talk every now and then. But see, when you're on the adventure, you're actually regularly depending on God to show up. And it actually pulls us into being more and more consumed. Now, I don't know what this means for each of us individually. But here's what I do know. Two things. Generous communities change the world. And that God is interested in us not just being on the journey, but actually being in the adventure. That's why today we're going to have meal boxes out there in the lobby. You can take your shopping list. Take one or two or four. Take them to your office. I mean, this is active generosity. Next week, the Giving Tree is going to be here. Darren's going to be out in the commons along with Ben. You know, you can stop by and add to the list. Help them hit 100. You know, help them go way over 100 mentors this year. This form that we've been putting in your weekly the last few weeks, we're not going to do anything with it today. It says consumed. Inside it says, what could you give? Next weekend, we're going to wrestle with this form. And right now, we're just asking you to read through it and to begin to ask God, God, where do you want me to invest more of my time? How do you want me to invest more of my money? And even some ways to walk out what that might look like. Because, you know, every time something significant happens in our life, there has to be a moment where we take action. Now, if you're not going to be here next weekend, go ahead and fill this out today and put it in the joy box. Yeah, kind of surprised you on that one. And, you know, because this is going to be a big part of our weekend next weekend. But these are the things we're talking about. And maybe for you, your next step is just is getting off the dock and getting baptized, getting it into the water and saying, you know, I started a relationship with Jesus. Maybe it was years ago. Maybe it was recent. But you know, I need to go to that place where Jesus calls me to. See, Jesus calls us to baptism. It's a very powerful thing. Maybe it's time to get off the dock and get in the water and just say, hey, I'm going to publicly express that I'm united with Christ. I don't know. You know, any of these things. Maybe there's something else stirring in your brain. But we're going to spend some time. We got this big prayer event coming up this week. It's going to be powerful as we continue to wrestle with what this means. And, you know, it's going on all week here at Cross Point. And Jesus, when people were around him, they noticed he had a power. And there was a power in him. And part of that power came because of prayer. In fact, people were always like, man, Jesus, teach us to have that kind of power. Teach us to pray like you prayed. And so Jesus actually gave us a model that unleashes the power of his presence in our lives. And we're gonna pray this. In fact, we're gonna pray the rest of this morning. We're gonna pray this prayer, and then we're gonna pray some prayers to music, which is what singing is called. And so, go ahead and stand with me, and I want us to read this prayer that Jesus taught us. He said, "This then is how you should pray." Let's say this out loud together, and may this begin our prayer experience right now. Here we go. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we have also forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one.